You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us. Many people throughout their life, and I've learned this through personal experience, many people, for one reason or another, experience physical symptoms, physical disabilities, many times no fault of their own, and it really alters not only your mindset, but your ability to do the things that we once did, whether you're an athletic type of person or someone who just liked to do things using your back or your strength of your body, your arms, your legs. But when that disability, when that accident, when that moment comes and it keeps us from doing the things that we love to do, the things we want to do, the things we plan to do, it certainly can have a really major effect on your life. I know a couple of years ago I experienced some spinal issues and have found a whole new appreciation for those who suffer from various ailments and disabilities. But more importantly, I love hearing from people who share similar stories and experiences, and that's certainly the case this evening. My guest is Mary Keating, a woman who at a very young age had experienced a very serious spinal cord injury that really altered a good part of her life. But rather than sit back and wallow and wonder why did this happen to me, it shouldn't have happened to me, this is bad luck, Mary chose, with the support of her family first and foremost, to take another look at things, and really made a big success of herself, went to law school, is now in the lead in a Connecticut law firm. But more importantly, later in life, put much of the story, and it probably was a very therapeutic part of her life, in a new book, Recalibrating Gravity, which is in poetic verse. And this being, I thought, very apropos, this being National Poetry Month, I thought it was a great time to have Mary Keating join us. Mary, nice to have you with us.
Hi, Al. It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
I hope that I described, it's different for everybody. You and I had a chance to talk a little bit beforehand. It's different for everybody when they experience physical ailments, accidents, disabilities, and depending on how severe, and in your case, it was a very severe spinal injury at a very young age that certainly altered your life. But there's no right way. I don't think there's any easy way, because I can't speak for you and I can't speak for anyone else that has a disability. But again, as you and I had talked earlier, what was so important for you? What made the difference so that you didn't feel saddened? You didn't feel like someone had taken something from you. You found the inspiration to go on and become a success in your life. Was it indeed family?
It was my family. And my parents raised five kids, and we were always into everything, and they told us to do whatever we could. And when I had my accident, that didn't change anything. My parents just said, okay, we're going to deal with this, and you need to move on, and we'll figure out how to do this. And also, my mother had just become a recovering alcoholic, and she was in the program of AA. And so all that philosophy of one day at a time, easy does it. So just living in the moment and being with parents that were so supportive, and I'm the middle child of five, so my family was fun, and they all have a great sense of humor. So actually, it was very sad, but we just moved on and figured out what to do.
Now, I want to go back and just give folks a little bit of a history. You were very, very young. It was an automobile accident. You were not driving, but you were the passenger. But how old exactly were you when you incurred this injury?
I was 15.
Very young, very young. Right at a point in your life where you're thinking high school and eventually college and wanting to go out and do things with friends, that had to be very emotional. Also for your family, I know you know, my daughter was very young. If something had ever happened to her, even if it was just a cold, I'd be up 24 hours until she was well again. It certainly makes people feel something that ordinarily they don't, unless it hits home. And in this case, it certainly hit home. So how difficult was it for you, but also how difficult was it for mom and dad?
Well, when you're 15 years old, you're just asserting your independence. You're out with your friends, and fashion is important, whatever fashion you're doing at the time. So to be 15 and all of a sudden relying on your parents again was a shock. And then to have a wheelchair now as your permanent accessory, which is not very cool back then, especially then when they were steel and heavy. And they today my chair is like pink highlights, and you know, it's very light. It's titanium. It was a whole different. So kind of incorporating something new and not being able to move around as much was difficult. But when I first was injured, I was paralyzed from the chest down. I still am, and I couldn't even sit up by myself. And I went to Burke Rehab, and I was there for 6 months. And they told me, you're going to be independent, and you're going to be able to take care of yourself and live alone and dress yourself. And I remember lying in the bed thinking, these people have no idea what they're talking about, but that they did. I ended up becoming very independent. I lived alone. I became a lawyer. I just went on with my life.
One of the things that I found very inspirational is one of the bylines in the book. In describing the book, is the fact that this is neither a story of tragedy or triumph, but one of adaptation, persistence, and the ability to go on with one's life and to cope with the daily challenges. That says it all for me, Mary, is the fact that, you know, I guess you could, for anyone, you could sit back and say, you know, I can feel bad for myself, or, you know, I can look for inspiration. And you know, those two things do happen. But I like the take, and I believe that this is what helped get you as far as you've gotten in life, is the fact that you looked at it and said, look, nothing's going to change this now. I need to adapt, and I need to find some inner strength, but I have to be persistent about this. I can't, you know, wallow in what's happened. Is that how it, you know, came together for you? How did that keep you on the straight and narrow?
Well, this is sort of a different take on what you're asking me, but one of the things I discovered when I had to get around in a wheelchair was how inaccessible our world was, and that angered me, and I wanted to change that. So I discovered that when you tell people a story, it helps them understand things better than lecturing to them. So I wrote a story about trying to go downtown and get my brother a present, and I described the things I encountered. I didn't have parking. I ended up getting a van with a lift so I could get around, and I couldn't park anywhere. I couldn't get up on the sidewalks, and that led to me going with the mayor. I got the mayor to come downtown in a wheelchair with the press, and he ended up having the town install curb cuts and accessible parking years before the ADA. So what I realized was it was the way our society is designed that disables me more than anything. And as we change the design, because right now there's a billion people who have some kind of disability, it really opens up the world for everyone. And so not just me trying to get around was important, but a whole class of people trying to get around. So that became something that inspired me to advocate for people, and I believe eventually become a lawyer.
This is the key. Again, like I said, it depends on where, you know, who you are as a person, what your inner strengths are. But what's coming through for me here, and I find it very inspiring, and I'm not just saying that, is the fact that you saw things that were kept you from moving about freely, and rather than just complain about it or go back home and think, you know, someone's got to do something, you took an initiative, you got the mayor involved, got other people involved, and before you know it, you know, they realize that they, you know, there's a vast host of people within our community, within our world, who don't have the ability to walk on their own, to maneuver the way others do. And, you know, we have to be very cognizant of that. We have to be very, I think, sympathetic of that and working through and working together cooperatively. So it sounds like this was inspiring for you. And not only did it help you personally, but it helped a multitude of people, right?
Yes. What was interesting is later in life, I ended up meeting an Egyptian scholar who had a disability herself. And she was fascinated to discover that in Egypt, ancient Egypt, people were buried with their mobility devices. And she even found that King Tut was buried with 140 canes, if I remember properly. And they began to realize that in ancient Egypt, disability was seen as part of life, which it is, not something other or different. And they have reliefs showing people with a cane and they're working, and they have people who are disabled, married to non-disabled people. So it's really fascinating. So disability is part of our life. It's not something strange or other. And the more we understand and adapt so that people, everyone can move around in life, I think the stronger our societies will be.
I love, and I want to pick up where you just left off, but I just wanted to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author Mary Keating, who at a very early age overcame a very serious spinal injury and found strength not only within her own family, but in helping others, achieving a law degree, now heading her own law firm, and the author of a new book, Recalibrating Gravity, which is a perfect book for this time of year. April is National Poetry Month. Mary, just what you were saying is that seeing that, you know, there was a time, I remember as a child, somebody would have maybe crutches, especially another student when I was very young. We had kids in school that one did have a wheelchair, one needed crutches for whatever reason. And two things happened. Everybody either stared, which I'm sure made that individual feel so self-conscious. And then there were always the ones that sit on the sideline and then they start to make fun of that person. I'm thinking, you know, as I've gotten older and experienced some of this stuff myself, I realized that there's no room for that in our lives. And I think through your efforts and you recognizing that among other people, it's helped people who don't experience these things to have a new sensitivity, and for lack of a better word, I use that word sensitivity, to understanding that they're no different than you or I. And I love that story about the Egyptians, that it's part of life. It is part of life, is it not?
Yes, it's very much part of life. And I relate to what you're saying about people staring, because I remember when I was over in England, because I've actually traveled quite a bit, and I was going down the sidewalk in England, and the people would go up against the wall like I was going to run them over or something. It was, I'm not going to hit you. I know what I'm doing in my chair. It was very funny. And one time I was in Switzerland, and I was with this young man, and he would jump on the back of my chair, and as we went down hills, and we'd be laughing and having a great time, and the Swiss were looking on at us with audible frowns. What is she doing? You're not supposed to have fun in a wheelchair. But it can be, it's just part of life, and you have to incorporate whatever you have in life and enjoy it, because it's so precious, life. You know, it's such an amazing gift we've been given.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I know if you and I were sitting amongst a group of people now discussing this in face-to-face and in person, many people would be nodding their head in agreement that, you know what, I mean, I didn't realize this when I was a teenager, because it was like, I'm going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but at some point in life, you realize how precious life is, how short life is, and we need to be appreciative of what we have here. But I love those stories about, you know, some people just saw it as, didn't see the disability as anything other than part of life, joined you in the frolicking and made you feel that you were no different than anybody else. And then obviously there's those others that, you know, kind of, you know, stood aside. Oh, you know, here's the whole sidewalk. Look, I didn't ask for the whole sidewalk. Don't make me feel like I'm different. So with that said, let me ask you that. Does one, when you get an injury, when you incur an injury as you did, was there a brief moment? Was there any time at all where you felt that you could never be the person you had hoped to be because of the injury?
You know, it was 50-something years ago, so it's hard to look back. I don't think that my parents let me wallow at all. I came home from the rehab hospital, and to get upstairs, I had to transfer from my wheelchair onto this rickety stair glide, and at the top, there was another wheelchair, and I got into my bedroom, and I probably took me like 10 minutes to do all that, and then my mother yells, "Mary, come down and set the table." I'm like, "Set the table? Is she serious?" But she was signaling to me, "You're not going to be treated any differently just because you have a disability, and we'll figure out what to do." So one of the things in my mind that I did was I just sometimes imagined I was in a bad B movie and I was waiting for a new director. So I just used a lot of humor to get through things, because I don't think life is livable without humor in it. It's like the WD-40 that greases everything so we can get through it.
It's I laugh because two things affected them. I'm hearing you talk, and it certainly has an effect on me, is the fact that the combination here, that your mother wasn't being mean, she was being loving. She understood that, you know, if we don't encourage her, if we don't treat her like the rest of us, then God knows what will happen to her. I find that so warming. I find that just so inspirational. And I'm sure she did it in a manner where you knew that this is out of love first and foremost, right?
I didn't think that at first. I thought that she was being ridiculous. And what, didn't she realize what just happened to me? I just had an accident. It's hard for me to move around. And why can't one of my other sisters set the table? You know, I was thinking that. But my parents were so great. My dad was innovative. He wanted me to go to a Yale-Harvard game. He was a Yale guy. So he built this special chair that fit over the portico, so when people stood up, I could still see the game, and he carried it with me. He brought me down. I was working in D.C. as a clerk, and he came down and he wanted me to go sailing on the Potomac, so he rigged the sailboat higher so we could get on, but he said, "Don't you do this with someone who doesn't know what they're doing," because we were on a Sunfish, and it could easily have flipped.
Right.
So they were just so full of life, and I'm sure that, well, my dad did tell me that when I used to go out with my friends, my mother would be very worried, but she would never let on to me that she was worried what was going on with me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. When you text every half hour, "Are you okay? Where are you? Let me know when you get home." It's not always easy as being a parent, but it is immensely rewarding. Let's fast forward now and talk about, because the poetry, the writing came in later in life, right?
Well, I was always writing poetry. My dad would write odes, and my parents loved literature. We were always reading. When I was a kid, our family learned The Antiseptic Baby and The Prophylactic Pup, which is this very complicated poem that we could all recite. It's hysterical on together. So poetry always had an interest for me, and as I got older, I found it a great way to express things in a very short space. Poetry, a lot of people are scared of poetry, but I think today it's so much different than it used to be. It's more a way of expressing things in a very short space that is so deep, and it speaks to us on a different level than any other kind of literature.
And you chose you chose poetic verse as the means to do two things, and correct me if I'm wrong. One is to express your deepest feelings about the experience and your life as a whole, as opposed to just writing it down and saying, well, on this certain date in 1963, you know, I got into an automobile accident and I've never been the same since. I find it fascinating that the poetic approach was the one you used. And I think you're right. I think today more people feel much more comfortable reading and even writing poetry. But with that said, Recalibrating Gravity is a memoir in poetic verse. How has it been as far as reception? I mean, have people been receptive to not just small circles? I'm sure you know a lot of people that are in poetry circles, but have you found that it has been accepted in that form?
Oh, absolutely, it's been accepted. And the way it's written, it's in just short poems. So with today, everybody has a very short attention span. So I was thinking when I wrote a book, if I wrote things in snippets and then put it all together, it would be kind of like the way we love to watch series. So you watch a series, but then you binge watch it, you go right through it. So a lot of people have told me it's a page turner, which I find so fascinating. But it's also designed so you could just pick up a poem and just read a little part, or if you're in a rush. And another reason why I wrote it in poetry is I couldn't even imagine sitting down and writing a novel. That just seemed like so long with my busy schedule. So I could, when I was waiting in the doctor's office or I was waiting for a client, I could just jot down the beginning of a poem and finish a thought and then move on. And it does start when I was young. It starts with my birth. I was actually born on New Year's. I was the first baby born in Westchester that year.
Wow.
And then it goes through being a kid and in church. And, you know, when you're a kid, I went to Catholic church with my family. And why are we standing, kneeling? I just want to be out with my dog. And then, you know, it just went through all that. And then having my first boyfriend. And then all of a sudden I have this accident that just changes everything. And about being in the hospital and dealing with all of that. And then it went on from what do you do once that happens? And then I have a section about dogs and humor and love, because love is probably the most important thing here, is love.
Absolutely. And I, as I'm listening to you and, you know, after reading the book and getting a sense of, you know, how did she do it? That was the first question I had, is, you know, why not just document it? But as you said, it could become very cumbersome. And sometimes all the, you're absolutely right. I know, because my attention span is one of the shortest on the earth. But the fact of the matter is, you need some mechanism to put forth the story in a way that would, one, relate to the reader, but also catch their attention. And it sounds like by using the poetic verse, you were able to accomplish that and still put your emotions and your feelings into it. So I think it was a unique approach to doing just that. But since then, publishing the book, achieving actually notoriety, not only on the local level, but, you know, statewide down there in Connecticut, and I'm sure in other aspects across the country, have you found many people like yourself from various backgrounds who share those you know, those emotions, you know why did this happen, but I'm not going to let it stop me. Have there been groups of you getting together, working together as a group to just to make people one, acknowledge that, you know, we're not different. Okay, we've had this setback, but we're not going to let this stop us. So has this helped you to form, I guess what I'm trying to say, is bonds with like-minded people?
Well, what was most surprising when I wrote the book is a lot of people I'd lost touch with in my life got in touch with me. And then one woman I had gotten to know on Facebook called me up, and she said, your book just saved a life. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, my daughter's friend is always going out driving with her boyfriend who's been drinking, and we've been telling her not to do that. So I read her one of your poems, and it just hit her what risks she was taking. And that to me was chilling, that somebody would, wow, you know, get so much out of a poem. Mm. That was just wild. The other thing that was amazing was I was searching to see, you know, how's my book being received? And they did a review of it over in Indonesia.
Wow.
Wow. This is really getting around. And I was so happy to know that, because I can try to advocate for people with disabilities around, but if you write a book, it reaches so many more people.
Exactly.
To begin to understand that disability is just part of life, and we really need to make the world more accessible for everyone.
And as you said, it brought the world, it made the world a little smaller, because you found that the far reaches of the earth, people that you never would have necessarily come into contact with, have now, there's been a contact through the book and the readings, and it's made a difference in many people's lives. We've only got a few moments left, but the story is fascinating. And one, I'm not just saying this, Mary, but, you know, giving you so much credit, because it would be, and I've seen it both ways. I've seen people, as and I think we alluded to it early on, wallowing and feeling bad for themselves. But the part is to take, go inside oneself and find the strength and the determination to go forward. And you've certainly done that. I'm sure you've been an inspiration for many, many people. With that said, the book is Recalibrating Gravity, a memoir in verse. The author has been my guest, Mary Keating. Mary, if people want to reach out to you directly, perhaps get more information about your work, what you're advocating in terms of for people with disabilities, how might they reach you?
Well, I have a website. It's called MaryKeatingPoet.com. It's K-E-A-T-I-N-G. So they can just go there, and there's a contact Mary. And they can, I'd love to hear what people think, share their experiences, maybe share some poetry. And thank you so much for having me here today.
No, this is wonderful. It's been a combination of things. And I said it at the outset. One, you know, we are celebrating April as National Poetry Month, but more importantly, a story, a very personal story that you were willing to share with others. And you said it yourself, that it has an impact on people's lives. And that's really what it's all about. We're not alone. As much as we think sometimes, why did this happen to me? Or why do I have to go through this? And we're all at that point at some point in our life. The fact of the matter is that there are many people like us, and it's just a matter of finding the right conduit to reach out to them. And by writing Recalibrating Gravity, you've certainly done that. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.